What if the next global conflict isn't fought with bombs and bullets, but with bytes and algorithms? What if the decisive weapon is an invisible stream of information processed in a nanosecond?
It's a chilling thought, isn't it? And it's not science fiction anymore. It's the silent, unfolding reality of the 21st century battlefield. It's something I've been thinking about a lot, especially from a historical perspective. We've gone from phalanxes to gunpowder to the atomic age, and now, guff, guff. This.
Exactly.
And that's what brings us here today for our conversation, The Data Dilemma, unraveling the role of big data in modern warfare. For me personally, I've always been drawn to the stories of strategy, the chess match behind the conflict. But now the chessboard is a live global network, and the pieces are zettabytes of data. It's a fundamental shift in the narrative of war.
And that's what hooks me, but from a slightly different angle. My interest has always been in the human element, the psychology of decision-making under pressure. When you introduce predictive analytics that can forecast enemy movements or even calculate acceptable losses, the ethical lines just start to dissolve. It's a moral labyrinth.
A moral labyrinth. That's the perfect way to put it. And we are going deep into that labyrinth today. We're going to explore how nations are racing to gain a strategic edge in this new digital arms race, the incredible complexities of data privacy when national security is at stake, and what this all means for the future of conflict.
This isn't just a conversation about technology, it's a conversation about power, ethics, and the very definition of warfare in the modern age. It's a dilemma, and it's one we need to start unraveling now.
So let's jump right in. To really understand what we're talking about, we have to get our heads around the sheer scale of the data. It's a number so big it almost loses meaning. Forget military applications for a second. Look at something like the Square Kilometer Array Telescope.
Oh, the radio telescope project, the numbers on that are just gaggering.
Staggering is the word. They're expecting to gather 14 exabytes of data, not per year, not per month, per day.
14 exabytes? And for context, that's, for what, thousands of times the entire printed collection of the Library of Congress every single day?
Something like that, yeah. Or think about genomic sequencing. It used to take a decade to decode the human genome. Now, less than a day. The cost has been divided by 20,000 in 10 years.
So you have this explosion in two things simultaneously, the ability to collect unimaginable amounts of data and the processing power to make sense of it almost instantly. Mm. And that's
the engine of this new battlefield.
That's the engine. Now, apply that capability to warfare. Every drone feed, every satellite image, every signal interception, every troop movement sensor. It's not just a collection of individual reports anymore.
It's a single, massive, constantly updating data set. It's a living map of the entire conflict.
Exactly. It's a living map. Think about a Formula One car. It has hundreds of sensors generating terabytes of data on a single race. Tire pressure, fuel burn, engine performance.
Mm. And the engineers are making adjustments in real time based on that data to win the race.
Now imagine that's a fighter jet, or an entire carrier group, or a battalion. The data isn't just for after-action reports. It's for making the next decision in the next second that could determine the outcome.
But that leads to a really dark question, doesn't it? The data isn't just coming from sensors on jets and tanks. During the pandemic, we saw governments use big data to track infected people, to monitor population movements for public health, supposedly.
A necessary tool, many would argue.
Maybe, but in a conflict scenario, that same technology isn't tracking a virus. It's tracking dissent. It's tracking potential adversaries. It's using social media, financial records, location data, the kind of data that companies like Facebook and Google handle by the petabyte to build a profile.
To identify threats before they materialize. From a purely strategic standpoint, that's the holy grail. Predictive intelligence.
But it's a terrifying thought. We're not just talking about predicting where a tank will be. We're talking about predicting what a person will do. And when an algorithm flags someone as a potential threat based on their digital footprint, what happens then? Where's the due process in a predictive model?
That is the question, isn't it? Due process is a legal and moral concept built at human speed. It involves deliberation, evidence, a jury. None of which fits into a microsecond-long engagement window.
So it just gets thrown out? The algorithm becomes judge, jury, and executioner?
Well, the argument from the developers, from the military strategists, is that the due process is pre-programmed. They build the ethical considerations, the rules of engagement, directly into the targeting model.
The model is designed to only flag individuals who meet 100 different criteria for being a threat.
Oh, I see. So it's not a snap judgment. It's the end result of a massive pre-calculated equation. But who writes that equation? A team of 20-something coders in Silicon Valley? A panel of generals? Because every single line of that code is a moral judgment call, loaded with the biases of its creators.
And that's the vulnerability. A misplaced comma, an unforeseen correlation. You're not just talking about a software bug that makes an app crash. You're talking about a bug that could lead to an international incident, or worse.
Exactly. A bug that gets people killed. And there's no appeal. You can't argue with an algorithm that's already made its decision. It creates this black box of accountability. If a predictive model wrongly identifies a school as a covert command center based on faulty data, who's responsible? The programmer? The intelligence analyst who fed it the data?
The commander who trusted the output?
It completely blurs the chain of command, which is the bedrock of military ethics. And it brings up the debate about keeping a human in the loop. The idea that no matter what the machine says, a person has to make the final call to pull the trigger.
Which sounds great. It sounds like a necessary safeguard. But is it practical?
There's the rub. What happens when the speed of conflict outpaces human cognition entirely? Imagine two autonomous drone swarms engaging each other. They're not just flying and shooting. They are communicating, adapting their tactics, and making thousands of decisions per second based on the other swarm's actions.
Like a high-speed chess game played by supercomputers.
Precisely. If your swarm has to stop and ask a human for permission at every critical juncture, while the enemy swarm is fully autonomous, you lose. Your safeguard becomes a fatal liability. The pressure to take the human out of the loop for the sake of efficiency and speed becomes immense.
So we're creating systems that demand we advocate our own moral agency just to keep up. We're designing ourselves out of the equation. That's genuinely unnerving. The soldier's role shifts from being a combatant to being a system administrator, just hoping the code they launched is working as intended.
And it's a profound identity crisis for the soldier. For centuries, the warrior ethos has been built on courage, physical prowess, situational awareness, trusting your gut. Now we're telling them, don't trust your gut, don't even trust your eyes, trust the terminal, trust the output. You're asking someone to bear the moral weight of a decision without the visceral, sensory input that has defined soldiering for millennia.
It's a complete disassociation. I mean, think about it. The psychological impact of combat is already immense. But what happens when that trauma is abstracted? Is it less traumatic to push a button that deploys an autonomous system that kills a dozen people 1,000 miles away than it is to see one person fall in front of you?
Is it? I don't know. My instinct is to say it's different, but maybe not less. It's a different kind of moral wound. It becomes less about what I have done and more about what I have allowed to be done, a kind of passive responsibility that might be even more insidious psychologically.
Because you don't even have the agency of the final action. You just initiated the process. And that brings up the other side of this. What if the process itself is compromised? We've been talking about this as if the data, while overwhelming, is fundamentally true.
Right. We're assuming the system is working with a clean feed. But what if the most effective weapon in this new era isn't a missile that destroys a command center, but a line of code that subtly alters the data the command center relies on?
You mean weaponized disinformation aimed not at the public, but at the military's own sensors? That's a nightmare scenario.
It's the next frontier. Forget hacking a power grid. Think about feeding an enemy's satellite imagery recognition system with thousands of subtly doctored images over months, training it to misidentify a school bus as a mobile missile launcher.
It's not about one big lie. It's about systematically corrupting their perception of reality.
So the algorithm, the one we've entrusted with life or death targeting decisions, is now operating on a foundation of carefully constructed lies. It's not a bug in the code anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's a feature of the attack. The goal is to make your opponent distrust their own intelligence. Not just one report, but everything. You want them to get to a point where they have a mountain of data, but zero confidence. You induce paralysis through uncertainty.
And the human in the loop becomes completely useless in that scenario. How can a human operator, looking at a screen for a 3-second approval window, possibly detect that kind of systemic long-term data poisoning? They can't.
They just see what the machine shows them.
They become the final tragic link in a chain of deception. They're a rubber stamp for a lie, and the enemy never had to fire a single shot.
That is terrifying. It completely reframes the battlefield. The most valuable territory isn't land anymore. It's the cognitive space of your opponent. It's their trust in their own systems. And if you can conquer that, you've won before the first drone ever leaves the runway.
And that's the checkmate, isn't it? We've spent this whole time talking about the weapons, the algorithms, the drones, but the ultimate target isn't a physical structure. It's belief. It's confidence. It's the very foundation of an opponent's ability to make a decision.
It really brings the whole conversation full circle.
We started with this idea of a new kind of battlefield, and we've ended up in a place where the war is fought and won inside the human mind, but using machines as the delivery mechanism for that.
Mm-hmm.
That cognitive poison.
It's profoundly unsettling. I mean, my final thought on this, the thing I can't shake, is that this entire architecture of warfare we've described, it's built on the data of ordinary people. Our social media posts, our online shopping, our location data, we're all unknowingly supplying the ammunition for the next generation of conflict.
That's the part that gets me. We think of ourselves as civilians, as non-combatants. But in a data-driven conflict, is there such a thing anymore? If your data can be used to train an algorithm or build a psychological profile that's then weaponized,
mm-hmm.
you're not on the sidelines. You're part of the battle space.
So, is there any defense? I mean, really, if you can't trust your own sensors, your own intelligence, what do you have left? Instinct?
An instinct that we've just established is being trained out of the modern soldier?
I don't think the defense is technological. It can't be. You can't build a better algorithm to fight a weaponized algorithm because you'll just be caught in an endless loop.
The only defense, maybe, is human. It's skepticism.
Yeah. It's fostering a culture within intelligence and military communities that questions the output, that constantly plays devil's advocate against its own systems.
A culture of doubt, which runs completely counter to the military need for speed and certainty of action. That's the dilemma right there. The very thing that could save you is the thing that could get you killed in a high-speed engagement.
Yeah, it's an impossible bind. And it leaves me wondering if the ultimate winner in this kind of warfare is just chaos. The side that can most effectively shatter the other's perception of reality, even if they can't fully control their own.
Wow. What a place to end. We've really journeyed into the heart of the labyrinth today, and I'm not sure we've found a clear path out. Maybe there isn't one.
Maybe the point is just to be aware that you're in it, to understand the walls and the false turns. This has been a heavy one, but incredibly important.
It really has. I think that's all the time we have, but this conversation is far from over. A huge thank you to everyone listening and trying to navigate this complex future with us.
Thanks for tuning in to The Data Dilemma. Stay critical, stay aware, and we'll talk to you next time.